Welcome to the Criterion Correction. My name is Dr. Bojimyo Zed.
And I'm Ed.
In this podcast, we'll be delving deep into the Criterion collection of films, trying to figure out what exactly it says about cinema as a whole and what makes a movie worthy of being added to the collection. Join us as we decide, should we collect them all? And tonight, we're returning to one of the show's fan favorites with Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo.
And, of course, you know that Yojimbo is Japanese for bodyguard, correct, Dr. Zed?
Didn't know that till after I finished watching the movie.
But you're aware of this now, which leads me to believe that the 1992 movie The Bodyguard is a remake of this film, and it made me really curious why they cast Kevin Costner as Toshirô Mifune. That doesn't really seem to work very well.
I don't know. I think with, like, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, he kind of gave off the swaggered rebel Toshirô Mifune vibe.
Because when I think of Kevin Costner, I think of swagger and rebellion. Like, we call Toshirô Mifune crazy eyes. I think Kevin Costner is doll's eyes.
Well, let's think about it. Wouldn't Toshirô Mifune have been awesome in Field of Dreams?
Do you think instead of, like, bats, they would have been samurai swords, and instead of trying to find, like, the 1919 Chicago White Sox and building a baseball stadium, he would have, I don't know, killed people?
That would have made for a more exciting movie, sure, but I was just thinking the same plot with Toshirô Mifune as the lead, but whichever version you want.
I think I like my version. Maybe he's the one who killed the 1919 Chicago White Sox, and all of them are I guess they're already ghosts, but instead they're ghosts that are there to haunt him, and instead of it being a way to connect with his dad, he killed his dad, and his dad's now trying to kill him.
No, we're missing it, because it's all about the different interpretations of the events of who killed the White Sox, and we'll get three different perspectives on that murder of the team that'll be lovingly wrapped in a frame narrative surrounding Kevin Costner in the rain talking with another person.
Or he gathers six other people in order to get vengeance on these Chicago White Sox, who he killed to begin with, but he has to kill their ghosts so that the ghosts of the Chicago White Sox don't threaten all of Iowa.
I don't think that works, because Kukichiyo is many things, but he was not a leader capable of fostering other people to get involved. So I think you're a little off on that comparison.
You know what? I think we're pretty off on all of this, so what's one more thing? But one more thing is poetic plot. Sanjuro randomly strays into conflict which he must appraise. He plays off both sides, rescues a man's bride, and sets all rivals in midst of a blaze. Alright, Dr. Z, want to go on a brief worldwide trek? The American crime novelist Dashiell Hammett, along with American westerns like High Noon, inspired the Japanese Kurosawa to make Yojimbo, which was then ripped off by the Italian Sergio Leone for A Fistful of Dollars, starring the American Clint Eastwood, and set on the American-Mexico border, before it got retranslated to America proper in the 1990s as the credited remake Last Man Standing. Clearly, there's something about the setup of men set against men by another man that transcends borders or time periods. But what is that something, Dr. Zed? Is it the morality of men getting what's coming to them, the amorality of the man delivering what they're getting, or something else altogether?
I mean, you're looking at a deconstruction of heroic narratives, and we can contrast this with other samurai films that we've watched in the past that have held the samurai as a gleaming beacon of code, you know, of hope and fulfilling of a code in their lives. And in this case, Sanjuro is the furthest thing from one of those. Well, not the furthest thing, but at initial outset, he appears to be an entirely self-motivated individual who just wants to kind of shake up this nest of vipers for his own personal profit.
So, and brief note, we're going to refer to Toshirô Mifune's character as Sanjuro, even though we know that's not his real name, but it's the best that we got, so we're going to go with it.
Well, we can always just call him Mulberry Fields, and I'm sure no one would be confused by that.
Mulberry Fields forever. So you seem to be positioning Mifune's character as kind of in D&D terms, chaotic neutral who moves perhaps to chaotic good, or is that an oversimplification of your position here?
No, I think that's actually a pretty good way of framing it, that you have an individual who really does seem to just be a self-motivated force, and there's signs that he's not an entirely amoral person throughout, but largely it's the sense of pitting a morally gray character against characters who are clearly on the, you know, lawful evil side of the equation.
I don't think there's anything lawful about the bad guys in this film.
Okay, not lawful, but I meant in terms of that they're generally abiding by a certain code throughout most of their interactions with one another, that it doesn't erupt until the end that they smoke out one entire side and just completely attack them in the depths of night, that there's some sort of mutual kind of stalemate code that they're trying to uphold until it all goes to waste because of Sanjuro's plots.
You got to bring up something interesting, because I go back and forth on my thoughts on kind of the moral code or lack thereof that Sanjuro is expressing, because on the one hand, it's clear from the get-go that he is in it for money. But as the film goes on, so also do the references to money. We get the sequence where he saves the wife of a man and his child and ends up sending them off, an act that costs him dearly. And then there's this quote from Kurosawa, who in talking about the film says, quote, "I've always wanted to somehow or other stop these senseless battles of bad against bad, but we're all more or less weak. I've never been able to. And that is why the hero of this picture is different from us. He is able to stand squarely in the middle and stop the fight. And it is this, him, that I thought of first." And so, like, that could be bluster about kind of setting up the moral universe of the film, but it does make it interesting to me on how it is that we're supposed to view him, because we got a lot of conflicting signs intentionally. So I don't think it's a case of a muddled portrayal, but I think it is intentionally kind of ambiguous.
I think it, again, is looking to render a little bit more complex these narratives. And as I said before, it's a bit of a deconstruction of this genre of noble heroes coming in and saving the area. And you have a version of this with Baby Carriage Samurai Warrior, where, you know, our lead samurai in that instance, what's the name of that movie again?
I'm trying to remember. Lone Wolf. Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah. And in Lone Wolf and Cub, you have the samurai hero who also kind of plays this game a little bit, but in all of these occasions is generally seen to be the force of good. And here with Sanjuro, I think you see a little bit of a progenitor to that later approach, where you're left to be kind of baffled. Is this Toshiro Mifune picking up his character in, you know, in Hidden Fortress? Is this a play on, you know, Kukichiyo? Not really. And instead you're given this kind of gray morality character that you have to spend some time with before you get a sense of what his goals are, because he really just by the winds of chance strolls into this town and kind of gets involved in a squabble that you can make a case for. They're like, wouldn't it be better for most people if he just hadn't gotten involved in that? I mean, if you look at the town before and after he's in it, it goes from being a village in a quite serious plight, but at the end, it's a kind of a burned out wasteland.
Well, and that's the thing. We see very few actual villagers in this town. Think about it. Other than the sex workers that have been co-opted or perhaps coerced by the different crime families, the only non-that villagers we see are the bartender that he strikes up the relationship with, the coffin maker, the people that he saves and then sends out of town, and the coward sheriff. there's no other townspeople that we see. And so I wonder if, like, the closing line about, to paraphrase, that things will be quiet around here is kind of ironic in a way, in that there's no one else here except for those people. And now maybe there are and we just don't see them, but it is interesting that we get so little focus on... This isn't Seven Samurai, where we do... get to know kind of the people that they're trying to save. Here, we really don't.
You're right. And I think that is a big part of the ending there, is you have this conclusion. You have, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about this soon, the way in which the violence of this movie is sudden, rapid, over very quickly. And you have almost an anticlimactic showdown between Sanjuro and the agents of evil, led by pistol-wielding dude. And I think that says something, because at the end, he's leaving. He's heading off. He's, you know, saying, oh, goodbye to the coffin maker and the barman, and it'll be quieter. The movie ends, and it very clearly is a sense of... Don't think anyone else is left here. This isn't a village so much as just a place where three random people live, and how are they going to necessarily make a living now that there's no one living in this place? And that's not necessarily the domain of Sanjuro. He's just going to wander along.
I also thought, kind of along those lines, we get a lot of dog wordplay and imagery associated with Sanjuro, to the extent that it's evident in the film and then evident reading about Mifune's interpretation of the character, that he's kind of like a wild dog. He scratches like one. People refer to him in terms like that. I think there's even a line about nine lives, which I wonder if that's just a translation thing, because I wouldn't have thought that was a concept that was known in Japan, but what do I know? So there's that clear setup there. But then there's also, and I might be stretching too much, but you have several scenes where he is perched above the action, kind of looking down on the town's combatants, almost like one could say that's because of detachment, but one could almost say that he also has a kind of godlike aspect to him. So I guess what I'm saying is, God is just dog backwards. So is he a god and a dog?
You are just so insightful today. I can't even put words to it as a whole. So I think it is meaningful that he's sitting there perched over these two squabbling sides as the outsider who can get a sense of the whole. That's his power. And I think that's what we enjoy about this character archetype, is you have an individual who comes in who seemingly has this perspective that allows them to take in a different approach than anyone enmeshed in the squabble is going to actually take. And what's nice about this is Sanjuro is a fairly arrogant character throughout most of this. That until you get a gun-wielding person in the mix, he has essentially no threat to him in this town. He can take on every other person with his sword and be fine. And yet, you have a clear moment when he kind of gets his karmic retribution for getting involved, is beaten severely and taken prisoner. It's interesting, because I had to almost even think of, when we were watching Police Story with Jackie Chan, that it had that character beat in it, where the hero is just downtrodden, gets the crap kicked out of him, and has to fight his way back to his former glory. But even then, it's the confrontation is just over so quickly here that it's... I think it just makes it interesting that you don't have the spectacle of samurai as you do in Seven Samurai, that you're left more with this sense of quick brutality and then the quiet that falls after. And that's really interesting to me.
And not Kurosawa, but there's only a few years after that where we get something like Sword of Doom, and only a few years after that where you end up getting Lone Wolf and Cub, which are far more explicitly violent and focused on its violence. It's clear that it's an intentional choice, the way that he is delivering this violence out. There's some genre thrill to it, but not that much genre thrill, where it is kind of intended to be short and brutal in its duration. Well, and speaking of kind of Kurosawa's oeuvre, as it were. I was thinking about, and I think this is something that you said when we were talking about The Hidden Fortress, because I remember that as well having some kind of straddling of the technological line where many of them are fighting with swords, but then guns clearly exist. And we see that kind of playing out again, where for now, swords again, still, or in this case, a knife, in that particular case, still ends up winning out. But obviously we know that that will not always be the case.
I think the movie knows that too. I think that is one of the main tensions, especially since this is towards the end of the samurai period when really their role is kind of finished. So yeah, a guy like Sanjuro is just trying to make his way from town to town to keep himself fed through the only skills he has. And here you kind of see what is replacing him, that his main opponent in this movie is not some excellent swordsman that's going to challenge him in a, you know, duel of skill. It's a guy with a gun who he has to kind of figure out how to grapple with that. And so part of it is really kind of working through the nonviolent means of manipulating these different individuals so that they kind of attack them each other instead of focusing on him. But then eventually it comes down to that face-to-face brawl. Wow, that was a drawl. Brawl. That face-to-face brawl. And that's where, again, the movie is not necessarily, you mentioned, I forget how you framed it, but you said it's like short duration. And so much of this movie is not about armed conflict per se, as it is manipulating individuals into believing something else. You get a sense of Sanjuro's skills, but there's not that many occasions where he's really, you know, showcasing those. And the final showdown itself is very quickly done with, as with the first one. It's just a matter of very just brutally, systematically using those skills to take care of people, and then it's over. And it's, again, just sort of an interesting way of not providing the sort of romantic notion of the spiritual duels that you'll see in other places in Kurosawa's oeuvre. Instead, it's really just the brutality of this as almost the fallback. You have these elegant plans that are laid out, and in the end, someone like Sanjuro has to go with a just show of brute force to kind of solve the problems that have been created by his manipulation.
And it reminds me, so I've already alluded to the things that kind of go on to homage / rip off Yojimbo. I'm going to make a guess that you probably have not seen A Fistful of Dollars, but I will assume you have seen Back to the Future 3, correct?
Yes, I have seen Back to the Future 3.
So remember in Back to the Future 3, the climax of the film where Marty ends up getting an oven door to put underneath his serape and so he can survive a shooting? That is in direct homage to A Fistful of Dollars, where Clint Eastwood does the same thing. I think they then call it out as such in the film. The reason I bring this up at all is because I think the imitators of the film kind of missed that point, where it's been a long time since I've seen A Fistful of Dollars, but at least my memory of it is much more concerned with like the gunplay. It still has the manipulations in there, but it is kind of more focused, or at least has a slight more focus on the action, to the extent where the parallel of the casket line is in A Fistful of Dollars, but I want to say he like shoots someone into the casket, and that is kind of the action beat there. So this is all a way of saying, while a lot of other works would go on to homage or rip this off, I think a lot of them also miss kind of what was inherent in the original.
That makes sense. And I just have to point out the caliber of our movie podcast, where we have to refer to Back to the Future 3 as our touchstone for dissecting the works of Akira Kurosawa and its adaptations moving forward. Actually,
it's even worse than that. I have to end up doing Back to the Future 3 to get you to Sergio Leone, which I have to do to get you back to Akira Kurosawa.
A whole just daisy chain of things. And that's true. I think that this movie makes a very conscious attempt at downplaying those violent actions. I mean, it's a very violent movie. It's not romanticizing the swordplay. And we see that in a lot of other samurai movies out there, that this is not about the spiritual conflict of the fight between Sanjiro and these other people. He just systematically uses his skills to take care of business. I do like that you get the whole gamut of Toshiro Mifune, from basically being very lightly bearded at the beginning to having his full throne of blood beard by the end, and you see the accrued brutality. I feel like it's almost like Commander Riker in Star Trek, that he beards up for the end and just takes care of business, and that's that.
Well, and I kind of like that in regards to Unosuke, the gun-wielding samurai, is kind of his dark mirror in a way. Well, I mean, light in that, but whereas Mifune's kimono is darkly colored, Unosuke's is lightly covered. They both do the whole hiding their hands in their kimonos, but he does it to hide a gun, whereas Mifune does it to hide a samurai sword. And in the long list of things that Leone rips off from this, and I forget if this happens in A Fistful of Dollars or the follow-up for a few dollars more, but the whole concept of kind of hiding his hands, I think we're meant to take on a subtextual level that maybe he doesn't have them. Obviously, we discover that he does, but to kind of throw off his opponents. And Eastwood rips that off by, I think, doing everything with his left hand, leading people to believe that he can only use that one hand, but then actually shoots people with the other hand. So basically, I love the spaghetti west.
Gee, spoilers, man. Gosh.
In short, I love the spaghetti westerns, but man, I see now how much they ripped off from here.
It's homage. It's remix. I'll have to watch it and see. Maybe it's, yeah. You'll have to watch them.
Well, with that, we shall go to our final segment, Collect Them All or Collect Not at All. Would you pay a fistful of dollars for this, Dr. Z, or would you hold out for a few dollars more?
It's just a shame you had to, like, ruin that lead up earlier, but all right. So for me, as in most cases, I am a fan of Kurosawa's filmography. And I really enjoyed the movie. It was different in some cases. It was different in some ways than I expected, especially in regards to the way that the samurai skills were shown off and the more contemplative nature of the hero / anti-hero, however you want to consider him. And it carried a lot in its approximately 2-hour runtime. So I'd say this is towards the middle of the road for Kurosawa's filmography for me, with Hidden Fortress at the bottom and Seven Samurai probably at the top, just because, you know, it's Kukichiyo. How could you not? But for me, it's a collect for sure. And I'll be excited to eventually look at the, I guess, sequel of Sanjiro sometime in the future.
Well, even coming into the film with the knowledge of what it would go on to inspire, I found Yojimbo of considerable interest, primarily, though not exclusively, because of Toshiro Mifune, because we do stand a legend. It was fascinating going back to the urtext of the spaghetti western and the modern western in general, if only to see how much of the ripoffs took from the master. Still, there's no messing with the original. And if our listeners would like to mess with us, how can they do so, Dr. Z?
Well, they can reach out to us on Instagram. We are at Critical Correction. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and future movie suggestions. Also, if you want to help support the show, we'd ask that you go to iTunes, leave us a rating and review, and please remember to subscribe on the podcatcher of your choice. Now that we've revisited Kurosawa, what cinematic gold will you have us watch for next week?
Well, Dr. Z, I've got a surprise for you, because, as you mentioned, there is another. So, we're revisiting Kurosawa again and going back to the Japanese West and watching the sequel to Yojimbo, Sanjiro.
All right, I couldn't have hoped for more. So I guess we're in our Kurosawa streak. Until next time, I've been Dr. Bojimyo Zed.
And I've been Ed.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.